Are we working? Yes, that sounds as though it may be. Right, again, apologies for late. We'll put that on the record as well. Emergency evacuation process. I think everybody knows how to get out and where to go. Apologies for absence.
Apologies from Councillor Buckstone and Councillor Keel.
And who are we missing otherwise? Jim Bailey, David Cousins, is that it?
Angela.
Oh yes, Angela as well. I think she mentioned to me that she... No, it was full council that she had something serious happen at full council, which is only 10 days ago, didn't she? I think I'm going to risk putting her apologies in on the basis that I have received them, but I haven't heard anything from either of the other two. Minutes of the meeting held on the 3rd of October. Any comments? Questions? Sorry, David. Sorry, John. Have you found them?
Yes.
Happy with them?
Yeah.
Anybody got anything else, or can I move them? Do I have a seconder? Thank you. Can we vote on them, please?
Unanimous.
Thank you. Urgent business. I've got a potential call-in from last night, or two potential call-ins from last night, and I think that's the best place to deal with them. Because I can't see anywhere else on the agenda where we could put that. So we'll put that down as urgent, and their potential, one in relation to the cattle market and one in relation to the DWP in here. And I think I'm outside exempt by saying it no more broad than that. But I'll ask Will if we go further into it, because it was exempt last night. I will ask that we go into exempt when we discuss it, so that if it isn't exempt now, anything we can say won't prejudice anything. John?
I subbed last night onto PNR, so I won't be able to take any part in it.
Yes, I had remembered that, yeah. Don't think there's anything else that's urgent at the moment. Declarations of interest. Anybody got anything to declare? No. Chair's announcements, item 6. I have 2. We need to arrange a visit to the job centre, and I have 2 dates. Wednesday the 30th of October at 9:15, which is very urgent and very quick, and it's not too good for me now, but it was all right when we first happened, or Wednesday the 6th of November at 9:15. And it has to be a daytime, because 30th is very difficult for me. Anybody else got any?
I can do the 6th of this morning.
But have difficulty with the 30th?
30th.
Yeah, it's beginning to look as though the 30th is a collective problem, doesn't it? Yeah, that, and it, the problem is it's got to be in the day. November. Wednesday the 6th. Sorry, John. I missed that. Oh, am I better off having missed it?
He was doing his John Inman impression.
Oh, right. Jolly good. Missed that. Probably a good job I did miss it. Yes, I don't regret asking because I missed it. Right. So, are we going for the 6th? I'm just hoping we get a few more than that.
I would struggle with the 6th because I work for a school, so unless it's in a lunch break, I would struggle with the morning. It's half term next week, so I could do the 30th, but...
You could do the 30th?
I could do the 30th, but I couldn't do the
6th. We need an accountant. If anybody qualified in accounting to work with me, it's a numbers problem. Can you ask, is it possible to ask the question? Because, I mean, you can just point out that we are an evening council. We have a high percentage of people working. And when we've come to nailing a date, half can do one and half can do another. And we need to go back to Di and, well, everybody who's not here tonight. Yes, it might be. It might be. I thought you were becoming freer in November, said he, looking at Tris. What day is it?
It's the Friday, the 15th.
Don't make a note of that, Will. The 15th of November. Anybody else? Let's just have a silly look back quickly while we're here. Does anybody else make that 15th? Because your knowledge when we had the working party and it was higher than most people's. Except the 30th. I've got that. I've got that message. Nathan? Could you make the 15th?
Is it a Saturday? Friday.
Friday.
Yeah. Friday's fine. I can take some time out on a Friday. It's a free day.
15th, Will? It sounds as a lot. There's quite a bit of enthusiasm, and I don't have the problems I have for the 30th. Yeah, with a lot of apologies for the shortness of notice, and blame the chair. Right. We now have, I'm trying to translate, we've got it there, have we? Thanks. November the 2nd, I think we did this at the last meeting, but it needs a reminder. There's the carbon footprint drop-in thing. And they spent enough on plastic paper in everybody's pigeonhole to make me wonder, but I'm far too nice to comment on that. And the after that at 2:30 is the Rydale Environment Forum. And I don't know if anybody from here went last... When was it? When was it, Will? The Environment Forum. That's November-ish. Yeah. And was a very, very welcome. All sorts of people you never heard of and whatever, contributing ideas and thoughts and whatever. It was well worth doing. Yeah. Well, as per usual. Right. That's that one. Now we have a briefing on identifying fraud, which I suspect you may have been going to highlight in your presentation later, ahead of the next committee on the 21st of November. And that's one of those I don't like for everybody else's sake. It's not a problem to me when we get into November, because it's dark. Sorry, John? Yes, you've got that in your diaries, have you? Has everybody else got that? Right. I think that's that. And it says, oh, 6 to 6.30, that's fine. And don't be concerned, and I'm saying it now, if that runs beyond the 6.30 in terms of it running, because it's silly to... We can delay the main meeting by 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, if that suits. Well, I'm just saying, when you're there and when it's happening, if it makes sense to run on another few minutes, please do. Rather than you rushing to finish, somebody else being pushed, saying, no, we're not taking any more questions, I shall be relaxed about it. All right. First, internal audit for progress report, page 7 to 22. The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Chair. If I can just point a couple of things in the report out to members and then, as usual, perhaps receive questions on the audit side and then pass over to Jonathan on the fraud side,
yeah,
if that suits.
Yeah, whatever.
As we mentioned in the covering and the content, this is the progress report since the last meeting in July where we can provide an update on the work we've undertaken and completed. Page 13 for members is probably the audit plan on a page where it gives you an idea of where the work is at. We've highlighted for those where we haven't started work the quarter we're likely to do that work in. In terms of the work completed, pages 14 and 15 go into detail on the payroll work that was finalised in September. That was a 2018-19 piece of work where in the area reviewed column we highlight the work we did, which was to document payroll and associated HR procedures and the existence of key controls and highlighted control weaknesses or duplications. We didn't actually test key controls in the work we did, which is why in the opinion section there is a no opinion. That's not a no assurance opinion, as in the lowest opinion we could give. It's just when we enter more into consultative and exploration work, and we didn't test the controls in this instance. We didn't do a scope of work that really allows us to give an opinion on the systems that we looked at. The work that's in the plan for 1920 will seek to do that. From the other side of the table on pages 14 and 15, you'll see the strengths, the areas for improvement, and the actions agreed associated with those areas of improvement from the relevant officers of the council. I think in terms of the report, I think probably less is more from my side of things, and I'm happy to try my best to answer any questions any member will have on any aspect of the internal audit side of the progress report.
Clearing the obvious one to start with is why, what the reasoning behind the not started is. Is this functionality or, you know, exactly what is the reason for that?
I'd say there's a mix of explanations behind those areas. The majority of them you'll see in the risk register category are the not started ones. I suppose I should backtrack a bit. Is with Anton and other relevant officers, we've agreed timescales with them to suit their work agendas as well. So, for example, on the HR side of things or the contract management side of things, they are key risks in the strategic risk register where management are doing some improvement actions already to evolve the arrangements in place. So later will allow us to evaluate the effectiveness of some of those changes in practice. So you sometimes need to allow those actions to be implemented before we can come in and do the audit work. We try to spread the work out a little bit throughout the year, and also from June, well, I suppose the first half of the internal audit year, from April to September, the first quarter is really focused on finalising the previous year's work, both to a draft and a final stage, so we can give the head of internal audit opinion. So it's a bit of a, in the next quarter we focus on three or four pieces of work that are in progress, and the majority of the work kind of kicks off around about now. So on some of the on the payroll and personnel audit as an example. We wouldn't want to start that until we've concluded the work that we've done this time around and allow a few months for the improvement actions to be addressed. So there's kind of a mix of areas in conversation with officers on areas such as risk management, where continued support evolving with certain workshops and improvements. We've been doing work on, for instance, the relationship and agreements with other bodies. That's a piece of work the Chief Executive is keen for us to get involved in, so that's one which we prioritised as part of quarter two work. And also, I'm just thinking some of the other work on the policy framework. This was one that was suggested by members, so we've started that work again in the first half of the year. So it's kind of a mix of circumstances, but it is underpinned by a conversation with officers to try and diarise the appropriate time for both sides to do the work to maximise the value that we do.
Thank you, Joe. Anthony?
Yeah, it's just to add to that, we have no concerns about that because they haven't started, but they weren't planned to have started by now. That's probably a really short way. Sorry, no, thanks for your comprehensive answer and explaining the context around it, but
used to like you.
They've not started yet, but they weren't due to start until now or later.
Supplementary for me, it'd be useful for us that are not au fait with the quarters and the starting, what part of the year are we speaking for, month-wise, it would be useful to some of the members who have not been on this very before or very long, and some of us have a retention of a very short span of this particular sort of information. So it would be useful. I know that when the financial year begins, and I'm presuming that's like the 1st of January in financial times for the beginning of the financial year, and the 1st of April. So if that's it, then I can work out the quarters from that myself. But as long as that's, that analogy is correct, I'm okay. Thank you.
Thank you, John. One's a concern, and that's the no opinion. And I think you need to find some other word when it's consultation work than that. If you remember in the pre-meeting or mid-meeting or whatever it was we had a couple of weeks ago, that sort of hit me. What's it mean? Because no opinion sounds like a pretty low level of audit rather than not making an opinion, because those phrases that you used professionally imply no opinion would mean, well, we're not going to comment on that. And that's not what you're saying at all. It's just a thought. It might be worth something. When it's consultancy work, it's not the same as doing it. It's an audit job, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose from the audit side of view, we provide assurance when we give an opinion. So we've got high assurance, substantial, reasonable, low, and no assurance.
But you're not giving anything at all, because no opinion. It sounds, as John said, and I fell into the same hole to start off with, sounds fairly low.
I should have provided some extra context in the report, Chair, just
whatever.
To explain.
I don't know, it's just a thought.
Yeah, point taken.
I don't know, it's not even that. It is a piece of consultancy work, in effect. One of my achievements in the first year of Chair of the Scrutiny and Audit Committee was to be able to proudly say, York have finally, after only 4 years of waiting, signed the payroll agreement. And no sooner had they signed it than it went to North Yorkshire. And aside here, trying to sort out my own tax up until this last April, I was talking to the head of payroll for Rydell. And this probably brings everybody into it. It brings this report into it. It brings the external audit comment of saying, oh, it's Rydell's, it's the council, your word, it's the council's fault here. And I was trying to ascertain whether or not it was HR or whether it was payroll. And I probably shouldn't have, but ask the head of payroll for here what is happening in this area. And her comment was, and I can't see any reason why it isn't, that it is the management of Rydale that should be making the informing rather than HR function. Now, on that basis, some of this lot points back to Rydale, I believe, rather than just at the payroll service provided by North Yorkshire. Can you throw any clarity onto that, Anton? Have I muddled it too much for you?
No. This is an audit of Rydale.
Yes.
The comments here are about how we are reacting, how we are managing a particular contract, and it may be, as we found last time, there was an issue which was being caused by something by the actual provider. But that's still our issue, because we need to be on top of that.
Yes.
I think that's what we're trying to get to, really.
Yes.
We couldn't just simply come back and say, well,
and
it's the provider's fault, because we manage the provider. So.
I'm not now convinced that it was payroll North Yorkshire, because if we're not, as Rydale, feeding things information in, then payroll North Yorkshire can't get it right. And I just think there might be an element of that in there, which this covers.
It's sorted, Di.
Oh, good. I hope it is more sorted than the payroll at York was when I was told it was about to be signed for a mere 3 years. Right. Is there anything else on that? I mean, I think that's saying what we all know, that the area needs work on it. And the good thing and the bad thing with a report like this is that by the time it got to being a draft report and then to a meeting, a lot of the things on it are no longer applying have been done. But I trust that Anton will keep his eye on what is to be done here and make sure that it gets nailed. Right, anybody, anything more to add anywhere? No? Right. Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. I'm here to update councillors on progress towards the counter-fraud plan this year. On page 19, you'll find our statistics up to the 24th of September. And I can say that we've successfully completed 60% of investigations that we've started, though that's only five, so it's a very low number. I would take that with a pinch of salt. We have identified over £10,000 of savings for the council in this current financial year, which is on track to meet our target for the end of the year, which is pleasing. We've received less referrals so far this year, but I'm not overly concerned. There are no significant frauds to report to the committee. I would highlight that in September, we ran a cybercrime awareness week within the authority to try and raise awareness of the issues around cybercrime with staff to try and prevent things from happening in the future. And thank you for mentioning it. I will say something about the training session on the 21st of November. Myself and a colleague will come, and we're not going to try and train you how to commit fraud. Just to make that clear. But I think what we'd like to talk about are the national issues that affect the whole country, the local issues that are affecting Rydale, but also how you and your role as councillors can help your residents, people who come to you, and also have an influence on counter-fraud work within the authority as well. If you have any specific things that you'd like to see in the training session, please mention it to Will, perhaps, and he could pass it on to me, and I'll put something into that presentation if you have a burning desire to talk about blue badges, for example, or a specific area of fraud. Other than that, I'm happy to answer any questions about this report.
Any questions, anybody?
The only question I can think is, we're dealing with members of public here, or officers are. We don't get that involved usually, unless we have a member of our constituents come forward and say, I've got this problem. But is this error on behalf of a majority of it? Is it error by an applicant for whatever needs that they need to address? Or is it deliberate actions on behalf of a member of the public against the council that you're looking at mainly? Do they fall into, can you categorise them at all?
It's really hard to categorise because in a lot of cases I can honestly say I don't know. I can't see into someone's mind to see what they were thinking about when they chose to take a certain action. What I'm prepared to believe is that, and that I know, is that people make mistakes in life and in general. And those are the people who I don't wish to penalise, and I don't think the council wishes to penalise. The people who the council and my team in general take action against are the people who we can prove took deliberate action to defraud the taxpayer, i.e. criminals.
You do differentiate.
It's very difficult to, I'm afraid. If you were really to push me, I might say 50-50, 60-40, something in that region. As much as that.
Any more for any more?
Well, then, if I may, Chairman, are we seen as a soft touch?
I don't think the council, as in Rydal District Council, is seen as a soft touch. However, I think councils in general are seen as quite offer services that that can be defrauded. So I could ring up the council and say, I have a single person discount and I've got people living with me. That's really easy to, it's an easy fraud to commit, as opposed to, say, robbing a bank, which probably requires some amount of preparation and infrastructure. It's quite easy to tell a lie in order to receive a discount or to receive an advantage. In that sense, councils are they're vulnerable to fraud, if not a fraud, a soft touch. Yes.
Have you not also got the problem or the distinct advantage that we are, as a council, dealing with so many people, bigger than any business in Rydal? No business in Rydal has got 25,000 households, other than an electricity company, a water company, and that is about it. And it's very difficult to defraud them. So by definition, we've got several transactions with each customer. They've only got one on the general run. We've got several, so that must multiply the chance of somebody being able to commit fraud massively. Am I right?
I think you're right. The council has a lot of customers, as it were. Also, something specific about Rydal District is it's a very large geographical area. Which doesn't always help.
Right, now this is where I get it wrong usually. I now want to move that the committee note the work, and it says undertaken by internal audit and the counter fraud team, and I want to add into that, not in the recommendation, and thank them for their work in producing these reports and thank them for their work since the last report. Thank you, John. Can we vote on that, please?
Unanimous.
Thank you. Now, here is the next item, page 23, is the update of the internal audit charter. Now, I'm impressed at this because it must be at least a whole year since we updated the charter, and it does strike me as a little OTT for to annual. I'm sure it could be done annually, but I'm hoping in future that we've got the charter now as we want it to be. So on that basis, over to Anton.
I don't think there's much to say about this, and I'll ask you if you want to comment.
It is. Thanks, Jonathan.
Sorry, there's not much to say about this, I'll ask you to comment as well if you wish to. But essentially, it is as you say, Chair. This is just bringing it here for formally noting the changes. Most of those are fairly minor. It's to do with job titles changing, or it might be to do with changes in legislation and references. But I think when we met at the pre-meet, the suggestion actually that we could actually just notify the committee when changes are made of a significant nature and take it as read that minor changes happen because we might have a change of job title, for example. I don't know if you want to add anything, Stuart, or happy with that.
I'd like to add that we don't need it back to change the year that we're in, which is what we've got ourselves heading towards. And we recognise your newfound title, and much appreciated. However, we won't need reminding of it in a year's time, just on the basis of trying to cut down things that we don't need to do. And I'm confident that if there's any major changes or a need for a major change, it will be in here, PDQ. Yeah. Lovely. In which case, do we do anything more exciting than note this, or do we approve it?
Technically approve it.
It's recommended that the committee approve the changes to the council's internal audit charter. I move the changes to the council's internal audit charter. Thank you, John. All right, now you know what the job is. Now you can get on with it. Now, up until this point, it hasn't been clear. Right. I'm more than happy, Stuart, if you want to stay, and equally, if you don't, I'm more than happy. Yes, because otherwise they'd feel very lonely and so on. Yes. Let's see what its official heading is. External audit annual fee letter. There's one before that. External audit annual audit letter.
Thank you very much, Chair. The annual audit letter is a mandated requirement for all external auditors to issue at local authority clients, and it has to be issued within 1 month of the audit opinion that's issued on the accounts. So you'll recall, members, that were at this committee back in July, we brought our ISA 260 report and the updated version of the statement of accounts. And a couple of days after that audit committee, we finalised our audit opinion. And that's summarised in this letter on page 41 of your packs in the exec summary. So I issued a clean, unqualified audit opinion on the council's accounts on the 31st of July. I suppose it's worth just mentioning at that point that the council achieved that 31st of July deadline, which was a really good achievement for the council and the finance team. Nationally, that picture wasn't as good. So two out of every five local authorities did not achieve the 31st of July deadline this year. So about 200 out of 500 local authorities, police, fire, pension funds, etc., didn't hit that date. There were a variety of reasons for that, which I won't go into. But nevertheless, here at Rydale, that was a really good achievement. I suppose the other thing just to emphasise on that exec summary on page 41 is the qualified except for value for money conclusion that we issued, which was around the challenges around the timely reporting of risk management and financial performance that we noted in 18-19 and indeed had been going on prior to that, which we thought was significant enough to draw out in our value for money conclusion. Just over the page on page 41, we've tried to summarise there some of the things that we did as part of our first year as the council's external auditors. So myself and Talina met regularly with the chief exec, with Anton and members of Anton's team. We also ran a development workshop for members of our new local government clients, members of who attended our audit committee effectiveness event. That seemed to go down quite well, so it may be something we look to do again in the near future. The rest of the document is in essence a summary of the ISA 260 report that came to this committee back in July, so I won't go over that again. It does really just mirror what was reported back in July, but obviously happy to take any questions on the annual audit letter.
Any questions? One comment to make, and that is I think the last year has gone in working relationships incredibly well, and it is very useful if you've got a friendly but fair working relationship rather than one that's just purely clinical, and it probably looks better if it's purely clinical, but on the other hand, are you going to get to the bottom of whatever anything is? And you've been terrific to work with over the last year, much appreciated. And although all we're going to do is note your report, I'd like to thank you for the work that's gone into it, etc.
That's very kind of you, Chair. Thank you for that. I think you make a really good point that, you know, external auditors need to strike that appropriate balance between sort of a rigorous, challenging, independent audit, but equally one that liaises quite closely with the senior management team and the audit committee to get under the skin of the organisation to understand the key issues so that we are aware of them and can provide some support or challenges necessary to those. So it's a really good point you make, Chair.
Probably going back a sentence, I'm not surprised the value for money ? Because I don't think anybody in the building knew what the value for money was in relation to what we were paying and what we were getting and whatever. It was fairly chaotic. And on that basis, you know, it was obvious, and I hope it's not that in the future, but it certainly isn't anything you could question your judgment on at all.
Yeah, I think I'd probably just add to that, Chair, that, you know, we could see that action had started to be taken in 18-19, which we do comment on in both this report and the one that came in July, Chair. The issue was that wasn't in place for the duration of 18-19, yeah. Hence why we had to raise it. You could equally say it wasn't in place at all in years previous to that. But we could see the action that the senior management team had started to make in 18-19. Clearly, that will be something that will be in our minds when we come to give our value for money judgment in July 2020 as to whether the changes that did start in 18-19 had been embedded for the full 19-20 year.
So, and again, thank you. And on that basis, I'd like to move that we note the annual audit letter. Were you trying to catch my attention? Just quietly waving. Oh, that's all right. Good. You were seconding. Sorry. I missed that one. I always miss one somewhere in audit. Ha ha ha! No, she's not going to do now after I've ignored her. Quite right.
Unanimous.
Right, we now come to something to do with money or whatever, but...
Thank you, Chair. So this is another mandated requirement for external auditors. It's a requirement to issue an audit fee letter by the end of April for the year in question. So back in April, I sent this letter to Anton, and in effect, all it does is confirm that the scale fee for Rydale is that which has been set by the national regulator, PSAA, of just over £32,000. I suppose a couple of other points just to make on this letter, Chair. One is the outline audit timetable on page 54 and 55. So earlier today, Chair, I met with the Chief Executive and with Anton. Very helpful, informative meeting earlier today to help kick off our 19-20 audit planning. And myself and Talina and our team will be taking that forward in the coming months, culminating with our audit plan, which is due to come to this committee in January. The other thing I would mention about this audit fee letter is, whilst the scale fee has been set at £32,000 or just above, obviously certain issues do occur in the year which may result in some variation to that fee. So obviously last year we ended up doing a lot more work on value for money conclusion, and there was the issue with the McLeod and the pensions work and our extra work on fixed assets, which resulted in an additional fee that was obviously discussed and agreed with Anton. So there may be things of that nature in 1920, but clearly if there are any, it will be discussed and agreed with Anton initially, and then it will be brought back to this committee should they so arise. But again, a relatively straightforward document is this, Chair, but one that is mandated and does just come to the audit committee for your information.
Again, thank you. I think my two comments are both flippant. One is we told you the value for money a year ago, plus as the cause of the problem. So I questioned that. And McLeod was one of these wonderful things that the government dreamt up. But I really don't think that we can question either of those two, because you had the work to do and the money needs to be paid for it. Anybody, any comments to make? Pardon?
We need to pay our bills.
Yes.
Which, if I may, Chair, the Council does, sir.
Yes.
But never on that, I never get an email from our credit control team saying, please change that top payment. So I'll just make that clear, Chair.
But you're saying that as if it's something that we should be proud of in Rydale. Right. I take it we note the fee letter as well. I move. Thank you. Pardon? No, you didn't get a chance now. Not now. I'm not going to upset her twice in one meeting.
Unanimous.
And I think the next one's my favourite subject. Yes. Stuart's going. If you wanted to stay, more than welcome. Yeah, more than welcome. Thank you, Stuart. Right, so we now come to the Treasury Management Mid-Year Review.
Okay.
Yes, please.
It is as it says. It's the mid-year review, which we bring to you, and I will just sort of highlight some of the key points to this. The headlines in terms of the financial implications of a Treasury management always mask the huge amount of work that goes on behind it. It's not, as I've said before, it's not the most exciting of reports, but it is really important in terms of ensuring that we manage our money properly. And there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes with the team and with our advisors to do that. The headlines are right at the very back in 10.1, which shows that we're doing a little bit better in terms of investment and a little bit better in borrowing as well. So that has a positive impact for the council's budget. It means that we get a bit more in, not talking huge amounts of money, those combined 17,000, but still it's worth noting that. To an extent, as well as being about good treasury management by people who are far more expert on this than I am, we're also to an extent at the whim of the national and international economic picture. That's why we do provide, when I say we, it's our advisors provide what I think is always quite a useful and interesting summary, Annex C, which is an economic update in terms of what's happening with some of the major economies around the world, including ours, the trade war between China and the US and that kind of stuff. It's all interesting stuff. Well, I think it's interesting stuff, but it can have an impact, as I'm sure you know, on things like interest rates and so on, and the value of various currencies. I'm trying to avoid it, as I'm sure a lot of people are at the moment, but we can't ignore the fact that Brexit has, or the possibility of Brexit has had an impact on sterling to date. Could have an impact, who knows what's going on. Already this report is probably out of date in terms of whether we're actually leaving on the 31st or not. We don't know that, but couldn't really, we can't avoid that, and we just need to keep on top of that. And I'll probably talk a little bit more in the risk register section on that, but I'm not going to get drawn into specific debates about the merits of Brexit or not. Anyway,
go on.
The other point to make, and particular in the recommendation, the third recommendation, is we do mention this thing, and another bit of treasury management terminology, which is called sweeping. Which you'll have seen, and this is just something we're exploring at the moment. We have said that we're going to explore, as part of our kind of commercial investment strategy, the best ways of maximising income, and we are looking at the possibility of doing this thing called sweeping arrangements with a number of authorities in North Yorkshire. We're still looking at it's still explorative at this stage before we take any decision about that. Well, we'll have to come back to committee for decision, frankly, on that. But that will also incorporate the question that you raised, John, some time ago around investment and or using money to fund credit unions, for example. And I think this work will prove that it's not necessarily an either or. It could be something that could be done together. So we'll bring all of that together when we can. I've probably said too much now on treasury management.
I enjoy treasury management. Keep going.
No, I'm done now. So there you go.
Well, I'm disappointed that was so brief, but. I'll have to cope with that. I would like to hear, though, the committee's comments on paragraph 9.2, which is the, and I didn't use this financial technical word of sweeping, of putting our investments in with North Yorkshire. And I'm sure that's not technically correct either, but it's the same. It's the same message. And I'll give you a comment for starters. North Yorkshire's pensions have been forced by government into going into a wonderful thing called Coast and Vale or something. So it's a local pension. Borders and Coast, yes. It ranges from Brighton to Inverness or whatever else. And North Yorkshire no longer has any say-so in this massive great machine, and they had a very good, in comparative terms, with other people's pensions. And I'm just, there is an advantage in smaller funds in terms of flexibility, particularly if you're looking, fund managers all over the world do incredibly well in their early years, and everybody's very impressed with them. And when the fund gets bigger, you can't make such a big difference by moving things. So I would like your comments, if you have any, on 9.2, if possible. Well,
just a question, primarily, what benefit is North Yorkshire County Council got out of being in that arrangement? I mean, in Egyptian numbers, in real sort of, you know, financial advantage.
I think that will be, I don't have the figures at the moment, but I accept
the question. I asked the question simply to pose the question, really, Anton. It's something we need to be aware of the scale of it.
Can I take that, put that another way and ask a question? Why are we looking at it?
We're looking at it because it could be an option to bring in additional income. It could reduce some admin costs as well. It's at this stage, it's purely exploration, and it would be wrong, I think, not to look at that and then bring back to members. And then all my role is really to point out to you, here I think the potential advantages, here are the potential disadvantages. As Councillor Oxley says, here are some examples of what other authorities have done and what it's meant to them. Discuss and come back with I suppose an instruction to me as to what to do with it.
My thought is that I don't think it's a lot that we actually spend on Treasury management, on the advice we get, because they're doing it for hundreds of councils and churning out the same comments to everybody. John?
It's interesting as a concept. And one person investigating this at the grade of pay that they're on for a numerous number of councils is makes it cheap for every other council except the one that's paying him. So the piggyback on that, the potential for that, I appreciate. I also appreciate that there's a possibility that we can get some income coming in. Now, that does interest me, because it's duck and dive time, in a sense, in corporate terms, as to finding ways to maximise our spend and maximise our income in any way that we possibly can. And I'm keen for us to investigate this further, definitely. I don't say jump in right now, but we need to go and look at this and see what potential it has, what payback it could possibly give us, and what the pitfalls are. We need to know what the risk is. The gentleman sat next to me can tell us probably on that front, on another occasion possibly. But there must be a risk in this. There always is in financial investment. And working on the markets, and then you've got to have that long-sighted view of what's going to happen with other countries in other parts of the world that can actually go and foul it up. So I'm keen. I'm very pleased to see this on this paper, but it's the bare bones that we've got there, that we need more info, definitely. But we'll be keen that we try and pursue and proceed cautiously with an investigative look at what can be done and how it can be done.
Anybody
and see what payback we can get.
Anybody else wish to comment on it? Shall I upset John and point out that that's the advantage of the EU, because it's a much bigger fund all working together, or do you think that would be tactless?
Not getting involved.
No. Right. I think my only thought on it is that I'm not convinced that it is the market in terms of where you can make massive big advantage, as you can in pension funds and things. You're making pretty small differences in here. And if you look at the range of organisations where we bank money, or put money. It's fairly low risk stuff, and if you go into the bank of wherever abroad and put money into it that isn't a recognised international bank, you can be in serious trouble, even though you're looking at getting more money. Yeah, Gareth, please.
It's just worth adding, Chair, that I think it's maybe about 10 years ago now, but a number of authorities were attracted to a number of the Icelandic banks.
Yes.
And look what happened there, Chair. So I suppose Councillor colleague has sort of questioned our view. I suppose everything has a risk, but it's the level of risk, isn't it, that would be the council would potentially be taking on by having, you know, North Yorkshire running the investment side of things for them, and it's a question of how much of a risk is that, and who are they investing it with? Importantly, you know, most of them on here, you know, AA, AAA organisations, aren't they, in Appendix B, which, as you say, you know, in theory should be pretty low risk in terms of any risk of any loss from investing in those.
And paying to get that recommendation is not going to be a large cost, can't they?
I mean, just to reassure you on that, is that we're doing this work in the background at the moment. I thought it was worth just updating
I thank you for raising it rather than us suddenly getting a paper with 2 hours' notice or whatever else. It's much appreciated you mentioning it. Was it BCCI? Is that the net? We were trying to think the other day.
There's a lot of councils lost money on that.
Yes. Yes, I think there's been 3 big ones over 30 years, and I think Slough's managed to put money in all 3 of them over the 30 years, which is quite impressive. John?
Just one proviso that comes up with in my range of a vision and memory, and that is that what Tony Blair and Gordon Brown did to the pension funds that were coming in at one point, and it was index-linked at one point, and they stopped that and then raided the pension funds to fund their own spend. And it never got back. I mean, we're going high politics here.
You can't do that.
But we need to be aware that we don't allow or get into a circumstance where that can be done by a government again, because that to me was absolutely treasonous.
Right, I think that is it. It is recommended that members receive this report, and the mid-year performance of the in-house managed fund to date is noted, and the members note the update regarding NYCC Treasury Services and sweeping. And that, in the minutes and years to come, will leave everybody going, pardon? But never mind, I move the recommendations as on the papers. Thank you, John.
Unanimous.
Right. Risk management.
Yes. Okay, risk management. Again, this is an update, and you'll be familiar with this now. We bring it periodically to the committee. This is the corporate risk register, and it is in that, what I hope is that more readable format from what we had before. It's for your information. It's also requesting now or at other times, if you think there are things on here that we've got wrong or things that you would like to add or see as corporate risk, because this is your risk register as well as officers, then please get in touch and we'll consider that. There is a bit of background at the front of the report which just gives you for information how we go about doing our risk management. The key for me, we tend to when we're looking at risk registers, people sometimes tend to get hung up on the particular colour or whether it's a 2B or a 2C. Actually, that's important because it helps you just identify what are the biggest risks. But for me, the key is actually the narrative that's inside it and looking at the individual areas and giving you some assurance that we, at the, as officers and at Strategic Management Board, consider this regularly. We do change it regularly. We're keen to update it and see things moving on. And the final thing I'll say is, and again, I'm going to have to mention the B word, there is a specific risk around Brexit. At the moment, just for your information, this is on the corporate risk register, and it's highlights, if you like, in headlines. We have a much more in-depth risk register on Brexit and potential, which we're monitoring on a weekly basis at this stage. We're monitoring alongside other local authorities in the region and with national government too. There's still a little bit of, we're not quite sure what's going to happen, but we're trying to get as prepared as we can for that, even if at times it might seem a bit of overkill, but it's probably worth doing. So that's it really. It's for your information, comment and suggestions for additions, deletions, changes, etc.
Well, I will, Anton, ask you the same comfortable and easy question that I asked Philip Spur. Yeah. As we're doing all this work on Brexit, mm-hmm. how many companies in Rydale deal with the EU and will be impacted by this Brexit thing?
I don't know. And I don't think anyone really knows. There's a gradation of impact, isn't there? There are those who are employing workers from other EU countries. There are those who are employing workers who may move to get into a kind of competition. And there are companies who may have an impact because of whatever future trading arrangements we have, whatever might happen to trades and tariffs and the value of the pound and all sorts of things. So probably every company will be affected somehow.
But we don't know.
We don't know.
yeah. I think it's a question of being ready to move rather than moving to start off with. That's my only concern with it. Anybody, any further comments on anything? I have a couple of others, but I've got the Brexit one out of my system now. Right, let's go back. Is there any mention in here of climate change, Anton?
There isn't at this stage, no.
It has been council policy now since April, and it changed at the last full council. And it doesn't appear to be down as a risk at all. HR services, I thank you ever so much for the HR service level agreement. But I haven't seen anything on equalities. And now that I look at the HR service level agreement, it does appear to me that it's not in there. So I've been trying to get that service level agreement for a little while. And if it's not HR, which I thought it was, whose is it and where is it and what's the risk if we don't? Because I believe there's organisations been taken, but I don't know whether councils have been taken to court over not doing proper impact assessments. That's that. Then there's a political one. You know your way around here better than I do. It's on political leadership. Can't remember where it is. That's Brexit. I don't want Brexit. I've had Brexit. Right, it says on the top of, thank you both very much, the top of page 88, no political leader. We have got one. Some of us may disagree with his particular political leadership, but to say there is no political leader struck me as a little severe. Yeah, please.
Yeah, so the perhaps we need to explain a bit better how this works. So what you've got in the top row is a potential, the kind of second one. You have the risk itself, a description of the risk and what the causes of such a risk might be. Then below is how it impacts on us. So leadership could be impact, a cause of risky leadership could be having no lead political voice. It's not saying that we have no lead political voice at this stage.
So why is it in red then if we have got
political and
officer leadership resulting in non-suboptimal, I'm putting a non in front of that because I'd say to think it would be optimal would be a big leap, and of non-failure to achieve council's priorities, which is a position I would have thought we were in at the moment, in terms of pure risk, not in political with this big P term.
So that top line with the first colour, if you like, is saying this is a description and these are the causes of such a risk and this is where we would score ourselves if we were in that position.
Yep.
The next row down is where we think we currently are.
Yep.
And then the row below that is where we want to be or where we think we will get to, because sometimes you will never get to a position of 1A green in any risk, but where we think we will get to if we do everything we should do in managing that risk. I say there may be some discussions and disagreements about whether it's exactly right in terms of where we are at the moment, and welcome your views on that.
Anybody, any comments or thought? I mean, I may be, Will.
Yes, if I may, Chairman, I understand the top box is about this is what could be,
could
but it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah? So, therefore, what is the in the box underneath the consequences?
Current.
What is the status of those statements?
Okay. Yeah, so again, the consequences are, so you've got the description of the risk, the causes of it, and the consequences of having such a risk. You then move into the controls we currently have, which is bringing it down, in this case, we think, to a 4C, and then the things we want to do. Which
so
one?
It does read like the box. That's my understanding.
Yeah.
That box reads left to right in terms of fine progress. That's fine.
And top to bottom.
Yes.
Yeah. Any more for any more? Are we thanking you for this and saying what a wonderful job you have done? It isn't treasury management, isn't this? So I'm not quite as excited with it as page. Oh, that's quicker than me finding it. It is recommended that the committee notes the contents of this report and comments on the format and details of the corporate risk register. And I think we should be adding into that, thanks Anton for the work of bringing it to where it is, and that the committee requests members of the committee to come forward and discuss items that need to be added, changed, considered. Because it isn't something you can do here and now. It's something that needs to be done when you have a look at it at some point and go, either what's that mean, what can we do about it, or why haven't they this? And I've given you a couple of the why haven't we's on equalities and climate change.
Yeah.
There must be others. Have you got that into some sort of words, or have I just been babbling beyond any hope of anybody being able to write? You've got that down, have you? Would you like to read it back, or do you want me to have another go at attempting it? Right, have we got the general... Will?
Just give me a sense, if it's possible, a piece of work like this, how many man-hours have gone into to producing? I mean, I'm not looking for precise. I'm not looking for a precise number. I want to get a sense out of Anton of just how much time something like this takes for somebody to do.
It's at least an afternoon with us as an outline.
I think there's probably two bits to it. The first bit, when we started doing this a year or so ago, we spent a lot of time on this. I've probably spent the equivalent of 2 weeks on this.
Right.
And there would have been a dozen others involved in this too.
Right.
Now we have it in a stage because we review on a monthly basis. I probably spend an hour on it, and I imagine other members of management board will spend an hour on this thing.
Yeah.
This particular document. Also in the background, which doesn't come here, are the service risk registers. So there's a lot more details. For example, as you can imagine, the depot will have a specific service risk register, very, very health and safety oriented in that. And other bits of the organisation will have their own. So it's... Because it's now in place and it's running, and it's helpful that it has to come back here, frankly, because we have to make sure it's, you know, in kept in good shape, then we're probably not spending a lot of time, but still it's taken an hour a month or so of each senior officer.
Thank you. Just gives me better understanding. Thank you.
I think, John, it's got to be fair to say that that is an hour a month for each of five or six senior people, so it's a fair chunk of time, plus all the service unit managers another hour or two, because they've got to gather from their people, etc. But I think Anton's understating himself when you said a couple of weeks a year ago, because it must be 15 months, it must be 18 months since you first drifted this one out, and it's come a long, long way from where it was, and there's been an immense amount of work.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to ask you how many drafts there were, but I must have seen six or seven, and I probably only saw them when you'd got them to a state that they were looking tolerable. So, no, thank you ever so much for it. It is very, very useful. Right, we got that, whatever it was, or somebody's waving. Are you both waving at the same time? That's beyond me. No.
I suppose it was just to emphasise from our perspective, I guess, the importance of the of that particular paper as a part of the wider governance of this council.
Yes.
So, you know, we talked earlier about one of the reasons why I had to qualify our VFM conclusion was because the arrangements around risk management and also the in-year financial reporting. The arrangements in place at this council were not adequate until things like this risk register process had been put in place. So, you know, the fact that Anton and the wider senior management team have now got into a process of having this as a living, breathing document that's reviewed every month, things go on it, things drop off it, there might be things like climate change that may need to go on it, but at least there's a process now and a challenge, and the fact that it's coming to the audit committee on a quarterly basis, that's a really strong improvement from where we were when we took over as auditors, and we were asking for these things and they'd not been to audit committee for 12 months or whatever, the process wasn't very clear, and we were aware that Stacey and Anton were wanting to introduce this. So, when we come to assess our 1920 value for money conclusion, the fact that this process is in place, and we might have some comments around tweaking it a bit potentially, but the fact that process is in place and it's been reviewed and it's been reported to audit committee is a real positive.
And it's almost like a rolling audit from the risk angle all the time, rather than suddenly out of the blue.
Yeah, absolutely, Chair. So things will come up from the service risk registers that may become a corporate risk, and equally things will drop off. And I think it's that living, breathing document that it does change, demonstrates the fact that it's becoming embedded in the council, and it's a really important point, Chair.
I think just you twigged a thought there, actually twigged two thoughts. One is, when things drop off those sort of registers, somebody ought to keep a list of them, because in 5 years' time, 2 years' time, some of them maybe ought to be back on, and they won't have done. We found this here with, we've looked at two major policies, equalities and climate change, and we've got cracking good policies on both of them, but neither of them have been looked at for 9 years. Now, you can have something on a risk register that is no value at all now, whatsoever, a service we don't provide or whatever, and it falls off, but then somehow housing then starts doing something in relation to benefits, and it creeps back in again, but the risk doesn't come back in to go with it. And the other one, it's back to the value for money. We had a very good training session on value for money, on non-finance, of which we had, I think, three councillors there, which was five for a little while, but then down to three. And we were asked, how does the council do on value for money? I can't possibly suggest that he'd actually looked at your report or whatever else and gave this. And we said, how do you do value for money on a dog warden if you haven't got one? Because if you have things to do that are statutory and money has to be paid out, that makes it very inefficient because it's over budget and you didn't have anybody in place to do it, etc. So it's right off the scale in value for money. It's all spend and no value. If, on the other hand, you don't spend anything, it's absolute brilliantly because you haven't spent anything on it. And that was the state Rideau was with everything, that we weren't, there was no measure of what we should be doing versus what we were doing, and to measure the two against each other. So, no, I think we're gaining, and thank you very much for that. Have you got, and have we voted? No, but you've got the word in, have you? Lovely. Everybody comfortable with what we're voting for?
Unanimous.
Just on a minor point, Chair, has that been proposed and seconded?
Probably not, Will.
I just don't want somebody.
Will you propose it or second?
Fine.
Yeah, ignore me altogether, that's absolutely fine. Yeah. Waiting, but no, okay, it's unanimous, I'll go with that. Next item, timetable of meetings. I am confused as to why this is on here. I think there is a case for overview and scrutiny members having a look at what work we do and what there is on the agenda for each meeting and the work plan, as to whether or not it fits, and talk to Anton in relation to what audit things come through, because we used to have a silly system where we had just audit and therefore this wouldn't have been on there unless it was going to the audit committee, and then it would have gone to the scrutiny half on it on that session. But there are things, and the audit is a bit easier one than scrutiny issues, because the audit things comes to a timetable. Timetable moves, I accept that, but you at least do know, have some clue what it might be in 3 months' time as to what has to be done by when. And I think we need to have, possibly with senior officers, chair, vice chair, and anybody who wants to come along, just to look and see what the workload is and what the balance, and whether we need another meeting in the year or whether we can cope with what we've got by shuffling things around. Because we have gained things like climate change report twice a year, risk register once a quarter. Now, they're all fine and invaluable things, but they just add up, making the agenda bigger and bigger. Any comments, thoughts? Because I don't think there's any point in agreeing with this yet, but if you would like to, I'm in your hands.
Sorry, so, comment, if I may. I suppose on the point you've just mentioned there, Chair, around the sort of future documents coming to the audit committee, I think under the the last item on the agenda, that looks ahead, doesn't it, in terms of what reports are due to come. So
yes.
On that one, you know, you might take a view as to how frequent you want things.
Yes.
I mean, personal view on the risk register, I would say quarterly is the norm at my other clients, and given where the council's come from and where it is now, I would, from my perspective, obviously it's the council's call, but I would encourage that to continue quarterly.
Can somebody make a note of that? Because I don't, you know, we're going to be reporting back to full council what we think or don't think on that, and I would like to be reporting back. We're giving it further consideration, but I don't want to lose Gavin's point there. Are you saying four or five, or are you saying four is a minimum?
It differs, Chair. So some local authorities and indeed NHS clients will have one audit committee per quarter. Some will typically have, say, five, where there's one per quarter and then an additional separate one purely for the year-end accounts. So that does happen. And then there are a couple that meet every 2 months, but that's probably dropping off now.
As someone who's struggling to get his accounts and his paperwork numbered together by the 31st of October, I bow to your two judgments as to what you think, and just to put in as to what we put into looking at it. Do you think we should be having four, or do you think we should be having five?
I think the four that we've got, because one of my questions, Chair, was just to confirm that the audit bit of overview and scrutiny is still presumably July, the second one in October and January and April, so that I can get that in my diary and Talina's. And the other comment I was going to make was that the July meeting is well timed from our perspective, and I guess from Anton's as well, on the 29th, so that would work well from our perspective, Chair. In terms of the frequency, I personally think one per quarter seems to work well.
Is enough. That's fine. Yeah. But if you and Will hang on to that and those four, I'm happy with those four to be there, as long as you're happy that we will push scrutiny things into those meetings so that we end up with things as balanced as we can. Because we're going along happily with one subject at a time, and then suddenly we're looking at, I think we got up to four, because one's been running for 3 years, one was dumped on us by full council, one we knew the universal credit was going to be slow, and the other one we didn't think was slow has turned out to be, so we're in four at one go. And that needs balancing to make sure that it doesn't end up with silly amounts of work. Right, are you happy to have that chat with Vice Chair and anybody else who wants to? We'll put out an email to say this, we're planning to meet then, so that we can have a look at what meetings we have and how it works. So I don't think we're going to comment on this tonight, but we need to prepare for when we do comment on it. And I believe Stacey's view is that it should be put in place in January, not put in place in October.
Yeah.
But I think it's been history that it's turned up in October. And I checked that first before I started throwing it in the bin. I have no idea either. I have a belief that budget should start in the autumn, and timetable should be done in January, February. But it was always the reverse. Well,
just so I understand, Chair, so in simplistic terms, what we're suggesting is because this is a final draft due to come to the January meeting anyway.
Well, it isn't a final draft. Well, it's a draft, is it?
So according to the document,
yeah,
it says that the final draft will be brought to overview and scrutiny in January.
That's a draft. So there is no need it tonight.
That's the point I'm making, John. I just want to understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the final draft. So what we're saying is we duck it on this meeting, so that but we have some input into what comes in January.
That is changed from what it was.
Yes.
And I'm
fine.
I didn't say no. We don't want it on the agenda.
Understand.
I'm just saying we're not making a decision tonight. And I got nobody's done any negative.
I'm fine. I just need to understand.
But we have picked up Gareth's point on the four, and that we need to look at that. But if you're happy with four, that's there, and we can look at the workload and what else there is in terms of the committee clerk, chair, vice chair, yourself, Tony probably, and or anybody else. We'll let you know when we're doing it to see what we want to put in and how we're going to make it work. And it's probably my fault, but we seem to be having a lot more work in overview and scrutiny than we used to have. Right. So what do we do with that? Defer it. Yes, we defer that. That's the way technical way of dealing with that. So I move deferment of the timetable. Have I got a seconder? Thank you.
It's unanimous.
Unanimous, is it?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. November 19th meeting wanted a forward plan. Review of work plan. That's fine. But we need to meet before we get to that, because a committee trying to decide what we're going to do is not the best way of doing it.
Yeah.
So I will bounce around. I'll ask Will to bounce around and see what we can make. What sort of evening times can anybody make if it's an early evening, so it isn't wrecking somebody's evening?
Anything from 5 for me.
Right.
I can't get here before 6.
Right. Good. Don't worry. I'm there in the spring and autumn, but not in the summer and winter. Will?
Just best if the Monday nights and Wednesday nights are the worst for me, because they will clash occasionally with the parish councils that I'm attending.
Yeah, okay. John?
Same problem.
Yeah, Will can do the balancing of that when he does a couple of dates. So it's looking like a 6:30 if you're wanting to take part, and if you're not wanting to take part, then we'll do it earlier, but you have the vetoes.
6:30,
right, okay. But you've got a veto. Anybody who can't make it, as far as I'm concerned, anybody who's working has got a veto on anything before 6:30, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
Chair, can I just flag to you that I won't be available from the 19th of November, so I won't be at the 21st of November's meeting.
Thank you. I'll put in your apologies to the committee clerk, because I won't remember, will I? I'll just look up and say, where's Will? Right.
The second Tuesdays are my usual parish council meetings.
Yeah, we'll circulate it. So we've got work plan on there. We've got performance report. Can we have, Will, for the performance report, the climate change one, greenhouse gases, CO2 emissions, electricity uses and those? Because I think it's a while since we've had some of them. Is my memory playing tricks?
Currently chasing partners for information.
So we're currently what?
Chasing out partners for information.
Partners. This would mean what? No, it's not some sort of a dance, I don't think, but it may be. What partners do you mean? Ah. Do we not get annual figures from them? Have we got annual figures up until the last annual present, or the current one?
I'm not dealing with it personally, so it's stored
up
at the airport.
Right, can you keep me informed of where we are? Because I don't want that to slip beyond, if at all possible. If it's outside your control, as long as I know, we can live with it. Customer complaints, that's fine. Safer Rydale progress overview. Scrutiny reviews, progress report. Overview, legal services, standards, complaints, overview, absolutely superb. And that presumably Simon this year. but may not. Right. Now, we have got to do two things, have we not? No, we've done the Universal Credit Job Centre trip. I've covered the notices on that. We now need to look at call-ins for last night, which item will? I don't think so, do we? We just note it. We can note it if you want to note it. Yeah, it's for information. It's all right. No, not a problem. Not a problem. I know it's terrific and you'd love to stay, but not a problem at all. I went a few years ago to the coldest day at the test match ever on any test match anywhere in the world, and I went to the day in Manchester this time that was just rain and howling gale. I'd never been to Manchester before, and I probably don't intend to go again. Love it. Take care. Oh, we're into that. Merry Christmas and see you in the new year and whatever. Yeah. Quite. Now then, last night we had... Can we switch the recording thing off and we'll just talk first and then I'll be feel free in doing it. I don't know how that goes in proceedings. It would probably be best to move into exempt. Let's move into exempt.